There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
It's the My First Gig podcast. Whoa, sharing stories of first gigs and shows. Comedians sharing their memories. The fun and entertaining, exciting and crazy. With Dwayne Dugan as your host. It's the My First Gig podcast. Here we go.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the My First Gig podcast, back again with the second isolation interview. If you weren't here last week Todd Barry kicked off season two. Wasn't meant to happen for quite some time, but we thought, why not sit down and chat with comedians also stuck in their homes around the globe. So last week was Todd Barry, straight out of New York City. This week the guest is Emma Willman, straight out of Los Angeles, California, formerly of New York. And yeah, it was a great interview, fun time. If you're not familiar with Emma, I first came across Emma's work probably about a year and a half ago on the Netflix, the comedy lineup, those short 15-minute kind of sets. For anybody listening in the UK, I know Ashton B does one, Phil Wang does one, and then there's some great comedians from across the pond that you might not have heard of or might not have access to too much of their stuff. And Emma was one of those. I remember really enjoying her set. You may also know her as Beth from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, appearances on Stephen Colbert, and much, much more. If you want to catch up with Emma, you can get her on Facebook at Emma Willman Comedy, Instagram at Emma Willman. I thought she was off of Twitter, but it turns out she's back on now under a new account at I Am Emma Willman. And of course, on our website, emmacomedy.com. So guys, if you're listening to this, I'm going to tell you this, like I tell you every single week. Head on over now to Twitter, head on over to Instagram, post on your stories and say, wow, just heard a great episode of My First Gig podcast with Dwayne Dugan and the guest, Emma Willman. Please do that for me. You'll make my quarantine time much enjoyable. But before I get into the chat, here it is, April 1st. April Fool's Day. I thought I'd look up what April Fool's Day is about, and there's so much to read about this that I couldn't be arsed, to be honest. I started reading a lot about the history of it. Turns out there's many claims for April Fool's starting, one of them being that in France, New Year's Day was on March 25th. Don't ask me why. Isn't that mental? And they used to celebrate for a week, and I would end on April Fool's, and then the rest of the all the other countries would be like, ha, France, you're dumb. You celebrate New Year's Day on March 25th, ends on April 1st. You're a fool, an April fool. France didn't use New Year's Day on January 1st until the mid-16th century, which is like, what, the 1500s? I was about to say not that long ago. Long before me, but still, I don't understand that. Why are they celebrating? Who knows? In Holland, it started in 1572, where the Duke Alvarez was defeated. And this is the part I liked, and I'm going to adopt this phrase. There's a Dutch proverb, I'm going to butcher this now because I don't speak Dutch. Op 1 April velor Alva zin bril, which translates as on April 1st, Alva lost his glasses. Now, if I'm a duke, I'm going to imagine that I understand what that means. If I'm some sort of royalty in power and I'm at the time where I'm dueling and going up against people in like some public battles and fights, if I lose and I die and then afterwards they say to me, oh, Dwayne lost his glasses. That's like insult meets injury times 100. So I think I'm going to make that my new insult. Make that your new insult. Like if you walking down the road and you see someone fall, you go, oh, you lost your glasses, mate. And he just look at you and he won't know. I'd be like going, oh God, on the ground as he gets up looking for his glasses. He doesn't even wear glasses. What a fool. Doesn't even have to be April. In 1698, the English philosopher John Aubrey referred to it as Fool's Holy Day, as several people were tricked to going to the Tower of London to see lions get washed. How do you explain that? I know we're all on the big Tiger King craze or whatever, but who's like, do you want to go see some lions get washed? Yes, please. You show up. Like going, wanting to do it is one thing, but then showing up and being like, ha ha, there's no lions being washed, you dumbass. I don't know. I started looking at some of the common traditions and like they're a lot of them are quite boring. It turns out only in England or only in the UK Is it the whole you have to do the joke before midday? So if you're like Irish or American and you're doing that whole get it in before midday, you're a Brit, which we don't mind. Forget that a lot of my listenerships are in the UK. We actually do like the British people. We just make a joke of it because of history. History. But here's one thing. In Ireland, apparently, Ireland where I am, you have to give the victim an important letter, make them read it, and it just says, pass it on. And then you have to make them give it to somebody else. Like, that's not even a prank. Like, I didn't think one of the things, of all the things for me not to be proud of in my country, I didn't think some stupid April Fool's tradition would be it. In the Philippines, they celebrate April Fool's Day on December 27th, 28th or 29th, which brings me back to the French celebrating New Year's Day in the middle of March. Lads, calendars aren't that hard to understand. April Fools should be in April. It's like December 27th, 28th, 29th is that, well, that's the time we're in now, it feels like. Just eternally December 27th, 28th, 29th. On that note, I hope you're all doing well. Keep insane. Hopefully some of these podcasts can keep you entertained for a little while. If you've enjoyed it, do follow me at My First Gig Pod across all social media. Follow me personally at Dwayne Dugan. Put up in your story, share a tweet, do whatever you need to do, follow, and say, hey, nice podcast, thanks for that. And find out who we have next week before anybody else. So please do that. I'm using notes the first time as well, I bought a notebook. So my ramble is very organized today, which is why I won't ramble for too long. Some of you say, bit late for that, mate. And I say, shut up, we got a podcast to listen to. So come on, cop on, sit down, relax. It's time for My First Gig with Emma Willman.
I have like mixed feelings. Like, I mean, it's okay. It's all things considered, like, I'm here. I don't have any kids. I'm fine. Like, I'm not, it could be so much worse. But recently I've just been like eating nonstop and I'm, you know, not feeling great about that. I just am like constantly eating. Like, I bought enough gummy bears for, I guess, maybe like 9,000 people. And I'm eating enough for like 1,000 a day. So, yeah, but it could be worse. I mean, I really feel like I can't complain about it because I'm in LA. I was in New York and I got out of there. Like, I think I left like 5 days before shit hit the fan.
Oh, wow.
Then I quarantined. And then now I've been like going on like walks and all that stuff. And I feel fine health-wise. How is it where you are?
Yeah, it's like our people are trying to kind of stay ahead of the curve. So like there's very, very kind of strict, like you can't leave the house unless it's for one of like 4 reasons kind of a thing.
What are the reasons they give you?
I think it's a shopping, medical, or one piece of daily exercise.
Wow.
Just one.
Right. Don't go exercising more than once.
I was going to much of it, yeah.
Yeah. They're just like looking at muscular people outside. Like, how much you been outside today, bud? So I'm not like proud to say this, but I was doing gigs right up until it hit like the like chaos level. And which was, I guess, okay. So I came back from New York. I'm so bad with it. I can tell you exactly though. I came back from New York on the, I'm pulling it up on my calendar. I think I came back on the, I came back Friday night. So March 13th, I came from New York to LA. And I was in Vegas the first week in March doing shows for the week at the Comedy Cellar, which out there, which is, they have a club in New York. And then it's also, they have one at a casino in Vegas. And like the writing was kind of on the wall, like, oh, people are getting sick. This is a problem. But I mean, a casino was a pretty dumb place for me to be. And like when I would go on stage, I would like spritz the mic down. So if I feel the need to do that, I probably shouldn't be out performing. But I did the shows and then I went from Vegas to New York, which was also a little bit weird. And then when I got to New York, the clubs were still open. And I think by like the Wednesday, that's when I started feeling weird about what I was doing. Cause I started being like, who are these people that are out? Why are they out? But they're out because people are still putting on shows. So I didn't trust myself to not, I'm like kind of like a junkie about comedy too. So I was like, I don't trust myself if I'm in New York to not do shows. In LA, it's a lot easier to not do shows because I don't get booked on as many shows. So they make that decision for me over here. So I was like, I'm just going to get back to LA. And I canceled, I had a TV thing that I was supposed to do on the Sunday in New York. And I don't think I've ever canceled a TV thing before, but I did. And I think it got canceled anyway. But I was doing it like, I was doing it pretty right up until he said to stop. And then I canceled this show, and I had a show in DC in April. And I was like, look, everything's been canceled around it. I want to cancel this one show. And I was like, it doesn't make sense for me to fly from LA to DC to do this one show. I was supposed to be doing like a string of shows. And my agent actually gave me a really hard time. He was like, you said you'd do it. You need to do it. And then I was like, I don't feel comfortable. But part of it was I didn't feel comfortable because of flying. But then also, I didn't really want to do it. So I still wasn't taking it like, I was using it almost to get out of something I didn't want to do. And then I'd say about a week ago, just everything got canceled. And I was like, oh, I have to, this is like very serious. And it's about much more than me having to cancel anything.
Yeah, like we were the same here. Like I was the same as that. I wasn't, as far as shows were going ahead, it was like, look, I'll do them. I think the last show we did was the 13th. It was like St. Patrick's weekend.
Okay, thank you for saying that, because I actually was feeling bad as I was saying that I was still doing them. So what is it like on St. Patrick's Day there?
Oh, it was like, it was so quiet. Like we were advertising ourselves as we're the only place open in town, which wasn't smart. I was hosting a show and my girlfriend was meant to be on the show and she pulled out. She didn't feel comfortable doing it.
Really?
Before and be like, do you mind if I still go? And
yeah, I totally get it.
Yeah, they pulled totally it on me it. And took the decision out of my hands. And that's, yeah, since then it's like, but like that was 2 weeks ago. It's crazy. It feels like 4 years ago.
Totally. How far in the future are things canceled for?
Just 2 weeks here, but like it's going to be rolling and rolling. Like there's bigger shows and stuff are canceled all the way up until like June, July.
Yeah, the bigger, because I've got a couple smaller shows in May that haven't been canceled yet. I'm sure they're going to be. I'm actually supposed to go to Vegas again in April, but I think that's going to get canceled.
Yeah, I think April and May are pretty much going to.
Shot.
Yeah, all over.
Well, it could be worse. It could be worse.
It could, yeah. Eating gummy bears and sitting at home, it's not the worst, isn't it?
Do you think that you're going to still want to do comedy when this thing passes?
Oh, like, see, I just like, are we all going to want to talk about things? Like, are we going to go up and like just talk about what we talked about beforehand? Yeah. And then they're like, oh, no, hold on, you got to talk about what everybody experienced.
Right.
But then everybody's going to talk about it.
Totally.
So maybe you won't want to hear about it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's going to be a real like equalizer. And then like I was thinking about that because I was like, it feels like really a lot of my material is autobiographical. So I was like, it feels really self-indulgent to go be like, so when I was a kid, I was fat and my sister was thin after everyone just came out of this. Like no one's going to care. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how people tie it in. It's going to be really interesting thing to be a part of when we're lucky enough to get out of it.
I think it's going to take a while for audiences to return, to be honest.
Yes.
I think like even once the walls and the kind of the permissions are back, I think it'll be slow.
Totally.
I think people will go to, I don't know, let's say weddings or graduations or things like that, but like things that they don't have to go to.
Right.
I think they might take a little step back.
Imagine if you were having a wedding right about now. Woo!
There's people doing them on the internet, which I'm not sure if that's brilliant or terrible.
I don't know if that's worse or doing a comedy show on the internet is worse. I'm supposed to do one. I'm supposed to do one of those. A college asked if I would switch it to a Zoom show and all the kids are home. And I was like, I don't know. I mean, I shouldn't say no because they're going to pay me the same amount of money. And so I should do it. But I mean, that I don't know if I can. I mean, doing an hour of material for no audience.
An hour, wow.
Yeah.
Like the performance can't be there. Like, do you stand up in front of a camera and do you like have the same swagger?
I don't know. I mean, if I don't think I can't do that. I can't do that. I'd have to be me sitting down. I just don't even. And then also like if you, an audience, you know, if they laugh that like, that's how my hour's timed out, incorporating other people. I don't know if I have a straight hour of just me.
Well, will they be on the other end? Can you hear them laughing?
The guy booking it said I won't be able to hear them laughing, but if they type something, then I can see that.
Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, or like, you suck. or something, and then other people can't see what they're typing, so fuck.
I think you need to do it now, actually.
I know, I'm probably going to. Did you see Drew Michaels' special? He recorded a whole special without an audience.
No.
So Drew Michaels, a comic in New York, and about a year ago, he did an HBO special with no audience. And at the time, everyone was like, I mean, the general reviews, he's one of my favorite comics, but the reviews of that special were that it was maybe a misjudgment to do it with no audience. But now...
Ahead of the curve. Wow.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about your first gig today. So, but before I do, I want to ask you, if I say to you, what's your first memory of comedy? What comes to mind for you?
Okay, that's it. I appreciate the way you phrase that question, because normally I would say my first memory of it is the first time I thought to do it, like that it could be an option for me to do. But that's because people usually ask, when did you get started in comedy? Hmm. My actual first memory of comedy was my parents got divorced when I was in third grade, and my dad got – I'm from really rural Maine, and we didn't have cable, and my mom didn't let us watch a lot of TV. And then my dad was like, I'll get cable, which is hard to do if you're like really in the country because the cable companies don't go out there. So he's like, I'll get cable, if like kind of to like entice us to spend more time at his place, which I guess sounds a little sad. I didn't see it that way at the time.
Oh, here. I went through the same thing. Competing parents was great. Yeah. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Ah, right. He's got cable. How many channels you got? So he got this cable package, and it had BET, which had this show called Comic View. It was this show. I mean, I was like, this is before, must have been in like fifth grade. It was a show where, I don't know if it was before Def Jam, but it was definitely very like Def Jam-ish, like in that it was like very like more urban acts.
Hmm.
And they had a comic that hosted it named Bruce Spruce. And I didn't know that. I was watching stand-up. I just thought, I just loved this guy, Bruce Spruce. And I remember thinking he was like just so funny. And I never would watch, he was hosting it. It was stand-ups. I wouldn't really watch the stand-ups, but it was the thing where, like, have you ever hosted a show and then afterwards someone like, you should do comedy too?
Oh, God.
And you're like, oh, yeah, that's why what you're doing. It's part of the thing. So I remember thinking that. I was like, that guy is funny. But I didn't even know it was stand-up. I just remember thinking he was really funny. And then I saw an episode of Seinfeld, and I was like, oh, he's like on a stage doing stand-up like Bruce Spruce. But that was my first memory of being like, okay, this is like a whole thing. It wasn't just the way Bruce Spruce talked. It was a whole like – and that's when I was like, okay, there's comedy and then there's stand-up. But I really distinctly remember thinking this guy was really funny. And that's my first memory of comedy.
And what about – seeing actual stand-up comedy live, did you see it before you tried it out or before you thought about trying it out?
No. Oh, wait, yes! I did. I had this friend that loved Margaret Cho when I was in college. Here's why I don't really think of this as going to a comedy show, because I never went to a comedy show before. Besides, I went to go see... So Margaret Cho was super famous when I was in college, and... she had this opening act that had a couple viral videos about shoe shopping. I remember they were like, let's get some shoes. There was like a line in it. And that person was opening for Margaret Cho. So I wanted to see the shoe person. My friend wanted to see Margaret Cho. We paid like $80 and we got these total nosebleed seats at this huge theater in Boston. And it was packed, like totally sold out. It was like a rock concert. And we had like shit seats. So it was, you could hardly see the stage, and it was just, I remember it was mostly gay men, and they were like screaming along to her jokes like it was a rock concert. So I didn't think of that as stand-up just because it really felt like a rock concert, and I wasn't familiar with her comedy. I was there to see the opener. So that was the first comedy show I went to, but like the first time I really saw someone do stand-up was the same night where I was like, oh, not that she wasn't doing stand-up. The same time I realized I was seeing stand-up.
Sure.
It was the same night where I was like, which was, I'd say, like 4 or 5 years after that.
So what happened then when you decided that you wanted to give it a go yourself? Like, was there much time difference between that?
Yeah, it was a couple years, and it was kind of the perfect cocktail. Like, it was like, I had a really good experience in college. I never thought I'd be able to do well in school. And then I did well, because I was in, like, special ed. I'm dyslexic. I had... of ADHD, like, but then when I went to college, I like managed to do really well in school. So I was like, oh, I can do anything. And I got this, I wanted to like be an inventor, and I got a job as a recruiter, like totally all over the place. And I got fired from my job. And the thing I tried to invent, I sent to like a scam developer. So it was the same week. So I was crushed. Living at my mom's, any money I was making, I'm sending to try to like be an inventor. And I remember then going to this party and this girl was doing stand up at the party. And I was kind of, and I remember they were like giving her nothing to work with. And she used the word tranny, and people flipped on her. Like she said it pretty offhand, and people, it was like this party in this really liberal part of Boston. And I remember she said it, and it was like, I was like scared for her, because it was, we were in a basement. She was doing it literally into a karaoke mic in the corner. And people, there, it was just like this like rumbling of like, oh, you can't. And she wrapped it up pretty quickly after that. And then I went over to her and started talking to her. And I was like, what is this? And she was like, I'm trying to do stand up. And which, I mean, in retrospect, asking someone what they're doing after they've done stand up is like the worst. What was that? I was trying to do stand up. But she like told me about some clubs in Boston, but it was like, I like had everything had like fallen through. I mean, in my mind, I was only 24. So I was like, I was in a relationship I didn't really want to be in. I thought that I was going to be like successful inventor. And then I had this job I found on Craigslist that I hated. And I was like, oh, I'm going to try that. Cause I was always definitely the class clown. So I was like, oh, how do I try that? And then I signed up for a comedy class.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. A lot of people kind of go through the class route.
Yep. Do they have this is probably a dumb question, but is that a big thing? Is that more of an American thing, or do you guys have that too?
No, I think that exists everywhere. Yeah. Like I've Irish acts. I went through one myself. A lot of English acts I've talked to went through the same thing.
Yep.
I think it's the fear of walking into a show. You know, you can't go there. You almost have to go to someone who's going to like baby step you along the way kind of a thing.
For sure. Plus it's like almost inconceivable unless you've started like, I mean, now it's like there's so many blogs and podcasts and stuff where you can get all this info. You know, like 10 years ago, I remember I found one blog that I would read all constantly. This a guy named Matt Ruby has a blog called Sandpaper Suite, and I would just read that. And the former booker of The Tonight Show, Eddie Brill, had a blog. Other than that, I couldn't find – and then there's a couple books. But other than that, I was like, where do I get info about this? And a comedy class was like the most logical step I could think of.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm very interested. It's a sidetrack, but I'm very interested in what's the invention that you had that you sent off?
Oh boy. So I came up with like a few different things. And I know like a lot of people are like, oh, I tried to invent something. So I always love hearing people's things they wanted to invent. The one I went with was this thing called Stop the Scuff that you put in the bottom of your pants, and it's supposed to protect them from scuffing. So I thought it'd be good, like, because I was always getting my pants hemmed. So I was like, oh, it's like a condom for your pants bottom. So stop the scuff, buffer between your pants and the ground. That was my big idea.
Yeah.
So I was like, I need to get a product prototype so I can see if this doesn't look ridiculous on people's pants. And I sent it to some guy and he was like, yeah, send me $1,000 and I'll make it. So I sent him my graduation money. And then like 6 months later, he was like, oh, you got to send me more money. And I was like, well, you haven't done anything. And then I like looked up the quote unquote company and I was like, hey, this isn't legit. And then he like blocked my number.
Oh, God.
It was my fault. I remember talking to a lawyer about it and he was like, look, you need to do your due. This is before I even talked to the guy because I was like, look, I can get a patent for $1,000. And he was like, you can't. Do your due diligence. Hire a lawyer, do it the right way. If you cut corners, you're going to get screwed over. And I was like, fuck this guy. But that's what I tried to invent. It wasn't meant to be.
So you go to this comedy class. Where was the comedy class?
It was at Improv Boston. And I was so delusional that they had three classes, like beginner, intermediate, and advanced. And I was like, and each class I think was either 3 weeks or a month, meeting once a week. Mm. And I remember being like, oh, perfect. I'll do these classes. So 3 weeks each class. So in 9 weeks, I'll be able to go pro. I thought of it as like a vocational thing where it's like you do the class and then boom, and then you get, you know, who someone hires you.
Yeah.
So I was like, I remember I was on unemployment and my mom was like, are you looking for jobs? And I was like, well, my unemployment is going to be up, you know, way after I graduate my comedy classes. So I'm actually ahead of the curve because in nine weeks I'll have my comedy job and then we'll be good to go. And she thought, fuck, I'm sure she was actually, I remember she started being like, you got to go to grad school. Like you got to go to grad school.
Any memories of the class? Like any memories of the teacher or other people in the class?
Dwayne, I remember that class so vividly.
Okay.
Like, do you remember your class vividly? I remember mine so well.
Yeah, mine was only about 5 years ago now, but yeah, it's I remember faces, but I couldn't tell you. Like people have asked me since, like what did we do? And I actually don't have a clue.
I don't remember any of the stuff I learned like in the class, but I remember the people. I remember he taught us how to take the mic out of the stand, because the problem too is everyone was kind of trying to impress each other. Like we all had egos in it.
Yeah.
Now if I did a class, I'd be like, let's workshop jokes. But at the time, we didn't. I remember I thought the teacher, who is such a nice guy, I thought he was famous. In my brain, I was like, oh my God, he's famous. And he never said he was. I saw him on stage at the show he ran for the comedy school. And I was like, this is a famous person. And it took like actually years for me to be like, oh, huh. Okay. That doesn't necessarily mean someone's famous just because you see them on. Like I remember seeing the introductions where I'd be like, this person does clubs and colleges all over the country. And I didn't know that can be made up. Like I was like, oh, the clubs and colleges all over the country. This guy, I haven't heard of him, but this guy's famous. So I really remember that. And then I had this friend, Mike, who we did the class together. And we kind of, I stay in touch with some of the students from it, but then I don't think any of them do comedy anymore. But I just remember like we'd all sit in this like tiny room and say our jokes, which must have been so fucking brutal because none of us had ever done stand-up before. So I can't even, I mean, I think what the teacher gets paid for is to listen to that like pure shit and not tell you to just go do an open mic. I mean, I went and started doing some open mics actually with my friend I made in the class, Mike. And that's where I started being like, oh, I'm not going to be a professional comedian in the next 9 weeks.
Okay, so like generally you do the classes and there's like a graduation gig or something, but you went ahead and you go, no, I'm gonna take this out.
Yeah.
Okay.
I tried to do that. He was like, you guys should do open mics. And so I went to some open mics and that's a very different environment because you go from a class where everyone's like, you know, I don't know. It's a very cushy. And then you go to an open mic and I started in Boston, which is a pretty competitive scene. And open mic, it's like, all right, you're signing up. You're going on at like 2 a.m. for the one person you walked in with because everyone's left by then. So that was where I was like, oh, shit, there's a lot of people trying to do this. And then it was – I wasn't doing open mics all the time, though. I remember I did a couple – did the graduation show. I wouldn't count that as my – the first gig that I would say that I had is not that, though. I'll tell you about that one. But I remember doing that graduation show and then going to the mics. And then that's when I was like, oh, this is like really hard. Like this is a, this is, cause I remember seeing people in Boston who'd been doing it for years and years and years that were like, you know, still just trying to get their name out there just a little bit.
Hmm.
So that's when I was like, or I remember seeing people that had been on this thing called Live at Gotham. So there's a couple people from Boston that had done this show in New York that was on cable. And so I was like, wait, why are they still at these bar shows in Boston? Shouldn't they be in LA with like Master P or whoever like was famous to me at the time? So I was very, very naive about the process.
So if the graduation gig's not your first gig, what would you consider your first gig?
Okay. I wish the graduation gig, maybe I should count that as my first one because that was fun. I mean, I remember that was fun. But the first like for real gig was a fuck. I mean, where it was like, I'm really considering it a gig where it wasn't something where I did like an open mic or in front of friends. So this guy hits me up on Facebook and he's like, do you want to do a real show? I'm like, oh yeah. He goes, yeah, I think you've got a good look. If you're funny, you kind of look like Ellen, so you might really be onto something. And he's like, and I see a lot of comedy. I own, it was like Joe's Crab Shack in West Warwick, Rhode Island. He's like, I own Joe's Crab Shack and we have a talent night. So I know talent and I think you might have some talent. So I'm like, this is it. This is it. So he's like, yep, I'll book you in the next couple months. Come with your best 5 minutes. And either he didn't tell me or I didn't take it in. He was like, you need to bring some people. And I didn't know about bringer shows. So I didn't know it was like, you need to bring some people. So I invite my mom because I'm like, mom, you got to see me kill at this show. Like, this is going to be like, then you will see. So I was like really excited. We were supposed to go to the show. And then I look up the address and I thought it was like half an hour from where we were. And it was like 3 hours. And I was like, oh, this isn't in the part of Rhode Island I thought it was in. So then she's like, all right, let's not do this, reschedule. I'm like begging, 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 please, 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 please. You know, this is it. I'll meet someone here that'll this and that and this and that. So she drives me to this show. We park. And I remember parking behind a truck that had a Confederate flag on it. And my mom was like, where are we? And I was like, I don't know. So we shimmy in behind this truck. It was like the only parking spot. We walk in. The guy's like, where are your other people? And I was like, oh, I just brought my mom. He's like, well, you can't perform. You need to bring other people. And I was like, you can't. And I was like, well, what if I buy their tickets and then I'll pay you for the tickets? So he's like, yep, no problem. So then I paid him. He's like, it's $30 a ticket, something ridiculous. So I paid him like, say it's like $180 or something.
Wow.
I probably had to borrow the money from my mom. Like, it was just a shit thing. So he's like, okay, you have 4 minutes. It's a competition. You wait over there. Your mom has to wait over here. And I remember just putting my car down at the bar and I was like, mom, please get drunk. Please get drunk. Because I knew it was like going to be a shit show. There was a guy with like mutton chops like eyeing her. At least I remember it that way. So the mic setup sucks. It's literally in a crab shack. People are eating crabs. It's noisy. It's a mess. I go up and it's awful. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. Even if I did, it was like a really bad setup for comedy. I remember it was a really low ceiling, which normally is good for sound. But this man, this was like, you could hear the like people popping open crabs. And I go up and I wish I could remember if I went up before or after this guy who killed. I think I went up right before him. Oh, yeah. Because I went up and I was like, I remember being like, oh, I think maybe they don't like me because I look funny. Like, if you've never seen it, I was like, maybe they don't like me because I'm gay. Like, and I've got short hair and they can tell. So maybe that's what it was. But also I just like sucked. So the guy that goes up after me is a very flamboyant gay guy and he murders. And then he wins the whole competition. And I think I probably did like 4 minutes max. And then I had to wait until the end of the show, which was like 3 hours. My mom was like, can we leave? And I was like, no, wait, I guess I have to wait. And then I just remember driving home with her. And that was the worst drive. Just 3 hours of her being like, what are you going to do? Like, what are you doing? And I was trying to answer her while I was also trying to answer to myself where I was like, I don't know. And that is when I downloaded an application to go to grad school. I went to fucking grad school.
Wow, yeah.
because of that first gig.
That's a heavy first gig for sure. Yeah. Like I can't, like, for someone to reach out to you online and recruit you 3 hours away to a Bringer show. That's insanity to me. Like what a guy.
I mean, it wasn't even a comedy club. It was a crab shack.
God.
Literally, like it wasn't even like this guy was. It wasn't even. I mean, who's to blame him? I can't. I think the place went out of business or something. And there's so many shows you can do in Boston.
We can't leave many 1-star reviews, so.
You can't, but I appreciate that.
Well, yeah, but like, you know, when you're starting out, you know, who are you to know? Like when somebody reaches out to you, you're like, oh my God, this is it, you know?
Oh yeah.
And you'll say yes to every gig that's offered to you for sure.
Of course. I still pretty much do. I mean, I have, like, it's so hard to say no. It just gets so ingrained in you to say yes to everything that then when you're like, wait, I shouldn't do this. It's too far away for me to do for what I'm getting paid. Or, I mean, there's such a premium on getting the stage time, but like, it's so hard to like, I don't know if you feel this way. I feel like it's always like, there's never enough, but like something in New York, especially when there's just so many shows. And then if you're doing shows on the weekend and you're performing, there is enough. And there's a certain point where it's like, you're not improving by getting up 6 times a night. You're not improving by getting up 4 times a night. Are you writing? Are you listening to your recordings? Are you being smart about it? Are you just running yourself ragged on the high of it? So that was something I had to like learn to weigh, but it's still hard to say no to stuff. Even if it's like, if that fucking guy hit me up right now, Emma, Joe from Joe's Crab Shack, how you doing? I would feel some weird... I wouldn't just be like, no, I don't know if it's because I've been quarantined for now for a couple weeks, but I wouldn't, it's really hard to untrain yourself those type of that thinking.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I want to go back to that night now. So obviously that's a real, like what, you're talking a 3-hour drive back.
Yeah.
The way a mother is going to think, you know, of course you can't fault them, but like as well. You know, previously you're going, no, I'm not going to go to grad school. I've got this going on. And then you yourself are trying to convince yourself. And then you're downloading this app. Like, what happens next? In your head, are you done now? Is that it?
No, like not even close. I was just like, shit, this is tricky. But that was almost when I like really, that's when I started getting cranking. Cause I'm like, all right, like what is going on? Like, what is this? Who are these other people? And also who are these other people? And that was the first time I remember the host told the joke. To this day, it was one of the, I was like, what? It was about how it's okay to rape, I think he said Korean women, because it already looks like they're crying. And I remember when he said that, I was like, I was just like, whoa. And however he packaged that, got a laugh. And that was the first time where I was like, okay, when people laugh, they're co-signing something. I mean, they can laugh and not and be like shocked by something, but seeing people laugh at it, I actually felt scared of like that mob of people. Cause I was like, who are these people? I'm now like afraid of a group that like co-signed that in that way. And then I was like, okay, but another group might not. And like, how does this, what the fuck is going on? So that actually almost made me like more interested. Like, what's the deal here? Like, okay, this thing that I really like, now I've seen an aspect of it that wasn't for me, but this is a lot more complicated than I thought. And that made me, I don't know, it wasn't even really a question. The times where I've like even questioned stand up more were actually as I've gotten like more and more and more into it, where I think the times where I was most like, fuck, was after I did the Just for Laughs New Faces. That's when it got even more, because I was like, in the beginning, it was like, there's always something to like really clear to work towards. So I was like, okay, I gotta do this. Then I got to New York. Then I got to get in at this club. Then I got to get a late night set. And then I got to do this. But then if you do some of those things and check those off, but you're like, I don't know what I was expecting. And then, I mean, now it's like, okay, you got to build your own audience and do your own thing. But that more was when I was kind of like that. I remember when I was, after I've been doing comedy for like 4 years, so 2 in Boston, 2 in New York, and I graduated grad school, I stopped doing stand up for a full year. Cause I was like, I got to try to do something else.
Was it just like not, I guess that there was no finish line or something, or what, like what led you to stop?
I was so overwhelmed because I was in New York, and when I graduated, I was like, how the fuck am I going to pay to live in New York?
Okay.
And when I was in grad school, I was like I was really lucky. I had like one of my uncles was paying for it. I had a scholarship, and I was working as a lab monitor like 10 hours a week. And then I was just leaving and doing bar shows and open mics. So I'm doing open mics from like 4 to 10, 4 in the afternoon to 10 at night in New York. And I used to drink a lot. I'm like drinking beer and Qdoba cups in class, like just a mess. Going back to New York, going back to Boston to get stage time, do shows. And then I was like, when I graduated, I fell asleep at the graduation just from exhaustion. And I studied media studies. So I was like, oh shit. Like at this point, I was like way more plugged into just like thinking of it as a business. And I was like, do I really want to, can I give myself an opportunity to try to do something else? So that's when I tried to stop for that year. But then I was, I'd say like 9 months into it, I was like, I really just want to keep doing entertainment.
Yeah. So taking a break kind of probably made you really realize this is the path I want to go on.
Yeah. And it was the best year of my life.
The year going back to it, was it?
No, the year I was taking a break, because I realized I was like, oh, I can walk away and still be a person. It gave me some sense of agency, because before I was no balance of life, everything, I'm just running. There was no balance. I don't really have a life work balance now per se, but that it gave me a chance to be like, I can, all these things I'm worried about, I can walk away. And there's something that with like Corona now, it's like all these things that we might be worrying about, something bigger can just like sideswipe it. And then it's like, oh, and we're still here and we can't always predict everything. And we're certainly not in control of everything.
You're probably far more aware of it, at least, even if you're saying you don't have that balance, you know that if you need it, it's there.
Right.
And look, sure, look, the world is giving it to us right now.
Amen.
On that first gig, you mentioned a joke that the host did, but do you remember your first joke that night?
I was hoping you wouldn't ask. I don't, but I bet it was so bad, man. I mean, I remember I had some joke about that I actually ended up like it was like the nucleus of, oh, okay. All right. I remember this joke talking about my dad wiggling his head when he doesn't want to say a word, but it was like, it wasn't a joke. And also it technically was an act out, but I spent like 4 minutes getting to it. But I also was trying to write some joke about how when you buy a website URL, you can tell where you're at in life, because it was completely not relatable. And it was because when I had bought a website where I was trying to invent something. So I was like, you know, when you're in your after college, when you try to invent something and you buy a website for it, which no one is like, yeah. Like I was talking about this very bizarre, specific experience I had, and I was trying to write a joke about it. And when you say something like that, people are like, wait, what'd you try to invent? What the fuck are you talking about? So I had something where I was like, just not aware enough to be like, no, what you experience, you have to build a bridge to tie it in. People might relate to frustration, but they're not going to relate to buying a fucking website about Stop the Scuff. Like it. So I tried to make some joke about buying a website for my, but it was very based on like, you know, when one does that, and no one knew. Like, it was like, what is this person? What are you talking about? So I don't remember. I don't think I had a thing I could even repeat, because I didn't have any punchline to anything. But that I remember trying to talk about buying a website.
Well, look, if it helps you, that's something I can relate to. The amount of URLs I've bought, and then you design the logo for the URL, and then you don't continue with the project whatsoever.
Exactly.
Over and over again. Before you went up on stage that night, if I could take you tonight and bring you back there to, you know,
oh boy,
smelling the crabs and hearing the crabs and worrying about your mother in the corner, if you just had 5 minutes with yourself and took yourself aside and could talk to yourself back then, what do you think you'd say to yourself now?
I think I would say, if I was being totally honest, I'd be like, look, there is no way this is going to go well. You don't because that's the kind of room where it's like, go up and you have to be so in your zone and doing your polished material that they will get on board with you as you just like work it. But it's got to be like those shows in Vegas are pretty rowdy that I do, because it's like, it's Vegas, it's a casino, they're drunk. And it's, I usually do 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes. It's a showcase. Four comics are doing that amount of time. And it's like, you do your most polished stuff, because if they start to get control, it's a tough, you know, or you're just doing crowd work where you're like going in a way I would have had no chance. So I would just say like this, there is a skill set you can develop. You don't have it right now. So just go up there and it doesn't matter and it's fine. And like, fuck these people and try one of the goddamn crabs that everyone's chomping on because maybe they're good. Maybe you're missing the point of the whole thing.
Well, look, let's leave it there. Thank you so much for chatting about your first gig with me.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it very much.
There we have it. Thank you so much, guys, for listening. Fantastic chat. What a horrific first gig. Like, imagine that. Like a crab shack. I don't even know what a crab shack is, but it's not somewhere where I want to gig. I want to gig in a comedy club. Somewhere called a crab shack. I don't even like crabs, so like, I wouldn't even be able to eat the things. I feel like crab shacks would do good wings. Hopefully chicken wings. If there are fish wings, do fish wings exist? Obviously fish don't have wings, but maybe fish flavored wings. Yeah, did a quick Google. Fish wings exist. So anybody there who thought fish don't have wings, shut up in your face. Thank you so much for joining me, guys. If you had fun, Emma, fantastic comedian, now based out of Los Angeles, but if you're in the States, check her out. She'll be traveling all over when we're allowed to once again. If you're in that college, record that and send it to us, please. Go follow her online. Twitter, I am Emma Willman. Facebook, Emma Willman Comedy. Instagram, Emma Willman or emmacomedy.com. We're all mad to do podcasts in this whole quarantine thing. So Emma said she's got a new podcast coming called Emma's Bunker. It's not ready to be launched just yet, but it is coming soon to help ease the boredom and just, you know, help create content and maybe use this time a bit wisely. So if you're interested and you want to hear Emma's Bunker, follow her on Instagram at Emma Willman for information on when that's going to drop for the first time. Guys, thank you so much for joining. If you did enjoy, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, leave a review on Spotify, subscribe. Do I say that? Subscribe? Please subscribe, leave a review. Help get this up. We've got great guests coming every week, so it'd be good if people are listening to it. Share it. If you're listening right now, give it a share and I will break the social distancing and I'll come and kiss you. Or if you, that's not something you want, I'll go do that. Follow the podcast at My First Gig Pod. Follow me at Dwayne Dugan. And look, stay cozy, stay inside, stay healthy, save lives. See you next week. Bye.
It's the My First Gig Podcast.